Planting milkweed helps the declining monarch butterfly and a whole host of other species, including birds. Learn how to find seeds for milkweed and other native plants on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Hello, X-ray listeners, and welcome again to Jazz in Portland. I'm Thomas Smith, here with Tom Skelly.
Hello, Thomas.
Here are some events for the week of April 27th. Monday, April 27th, at Corkscrew Wine Bar, 1665 Southeast Bybee Boulevard, Dan Balmer's Sort of Quiet Trio, Mellow Jazz, 7 to 9 p.m. Tuesday, April 28th, at Joe Barn Rotisserie at Papa Haydn, 715 Northwest 23rd Avenue, jamming with George Colligan, 7 to 10 p.m. Wednesday, April 29th, at Arrivederci, 17023 Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard, Mike Horsfall Quartet, 7 to 9 p.m. Thursday, April 30th, at the 1905 830 North Shaver Street, just off Mississippi, Double Keyboard Night with George Colligan and Nick Rolfe, 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. At Arrivederci, Ron Steen Band, 7 to 9 p.m. Friday, May 1st, at 1905, Noah Simpson Quartet, 6:30 and 8:30 p.m. Saturday, May 2nd, at the Cut Supper Club, 456 North State Street, Lake Oswego, Paula Byrne Vocals, Craig Iverson Keys, Tim Gilson Bass, and Todd Strait Drums, 5 to 8 p.m. At Double Mountain Woodstock Tap Room, 4336 Southeast Woodstock Boulevard, Megan Tucker Trio, featuring Dylan Ilsen, 6 to 8 p.m. Sunday, May 3rd, at the 1905, Mike Prigodich Electric Group with John Nasto Sax, Cameron Morgan Guitar, Damian Erskine Bass, and Noah Mortola Drums, 5:30 and 7:30 p.m.
Stay tuned for more info on Jazz in Portland and streaming online everywhere at xray.fm.
Thanks for listening. Enjoy Portland music.
You're listening to X-Ray FM.
KXRY Portland.
At 91.1 and 107.1 FM.
And in Nehalem.
Wheeler.
Manzanita.
And Rockaway Beach.
At 91.7 FM. Streaming online everywhere.
Live and archived.
At xray.fm.
Radio is yours.
Radio is yours.
Featuring electro, new wave, and old school from the 1980s. DJ Triple M's all-new Space Paranoids RX. Wednesday nights at 11, following Heavy Metal Sewing Circle, right here on X-Ray FM.
My name is Ray, and I became homeless at 15. Years later, when I tried to get off the streets, someone told me about Transition Projects and its mission to help people from homelessness to housing. Transition Projects set me up with a case manager who gave me something I hadn't had for years, someone who believed in me. They got me into housing and access to mental health and addiction resources. 12 years later, I'm a proud Transition Projects employee overseeing a team of case managers like the one who helped me. More information at tprojects.org.
Good morning, everybody. This is Aaron Loftus, board member for X-Ray FM, KXRY. Have a sunny day in Portland.
Sorrows and dance.
forget your sickness and dance. Forget your weakness and dance. Cost of living gets so high, rich and poor they start to cry. Now the weak must get strong, they say, oh, what a tribulation. Them belly full but we hungry. Hungry mob is a hungry mob. A rain a fall but a dirty tough. A pot of yoke, but you not enough. We're gonna chuck to jam music. Chucking, hey, we're chucking to jam music. We're chucking.
Story, an absolutely wild story, is Benjamin Netanyahu helping Putin loot Ukraine? I mean, this is one of those kind of convergence of the authoritarians things that I've been talking about for some time now, that, you know, Trump, Putin, Netanyahu, Orban, Modi in India, it's kind of the authoritarians club. They're all people who you know, don't seem all that fond of democracy, you know, thumb their nose at the international community. Yes, we can commit war crimes. Screw you. But this is a particularly extreme example. I mean, this should outrage every American who supports Ukraine. Russia has industrialized the theft of Ukrainian grain. Now, Ukraine is the breadbasket to Europe. Ukraine is a huge country. It's the physically largest country in all of Europe, and it's got some of the richest soil in all of Europe because, you know, there's mountain ranges on either side of it, you know, long distance away. But my point is that, you know, there's just millennia, eons, millions of years. You know, of erosion have filled Ukraine, have covered Ukraine with some of the richest soil in Europe. And they produce, you know, something like 25% of the grain that Africa consumes. They produce, I believe, 10% of the world's grain. I'm doing this from memory, so go back and check the numbers, but they're huge. I mean, the amount of wheat and barley in particular that Ukraine produces is absolutely mind-boggling. Compared to any other country in the world other than the United States. I mean, we beat them, but we're much, much larger. Ukraine is, you know, about the size of Texas, I believe. So, anyhow, more than 2 million tons have been looted from occupied territory in just last year, just in 2025 alone. And it's continuing. They're doing it right now. And Israel keeps letting in this looted grain on Sunday, just this weekend. The Panama-flagged ship Panamitis arrived in Haifa, you know, it was an Israeli port, carrying over 6,200 tons of stolen wheat and 19,000 tons of stolen barley. And Israel is offloading this grain. Their businesses are taking it in. They're reselling it to the world, or they're using it in Israel. I mean, I don't know exactly where it's all going, but this is all with the explicit, open, enthusiastic complicity of the Israeli government, of the Netanyahu administration. And this is the second time this month. Earlier in April, the Russian carrier Abinsk dumped nearly 44,000 tons of stolen Ukrainian wheat at that same port, Haifa. Now, even Egypt refuses to take these shipments, right? That's stolen grain. And Israel is supposed to be like our ally. They're supposed to be the democracy in the region. They're supposed to be the one that sets the example. Yes, we believe in the international order and the rule. No, no, not anymore. Not under Netanyahu. Israel is taking this grain. Ukraine's foreign minister just summoned the Israeli ambassador. The EU is warning of sanctions, which, you know, raises this question. Why is Netanyahu running cover for Putin while Russia is sending weaponry to Iran and targeting information for both American soldiers and facilities? And by the way, we're learning that the American facilities have been damaged way beyond what we thought. When they're sending those arms to Iran and they're shipping drone parts that kill Ukrainian citizens, I mean, I don't get it. What am I missing here? I think this is another example of the, you know, how Benjamin Netanyahu just thinks he's above any law. He has no obligations to anybody. He has no loyalty to anybody. He's just, you know, we're going to go our own way. This is it. I'm just doing what I, and hey, Putin's got some grain to sell that he stole from Ukraine. Egypt won't take it. Saudi Arabia's not taking it. Oman and the UAE aren't taking it. Israel's taking it. What the hell is going on? And then they come over here and they throw all this money into political campaigns through AIPAC and all its various front groups. It's wild. I shouldn't have to say this, but I, you know, it's an important caveat. I have been a big supporter and a big fan of Israel for my whole entire life. I've been there. I've done business there. I helped start a children's charity there, which is now one of the largest, if not the largest, in the country. I have friends who live there who I speak with regularly. And Israel is rapidly becoming a pariah state. You've got an actual genocide that they've committed in Gaza. Benjamin Netanyahu is an indicted war criminal by the International Criminal Court. And here we go. Now he's getting in bed with Putin. I mean, it's just crazy stuff. This should not be happening. This absolutely should not be happening. And you know, why we're sending $3.5 billion every year, just, you know, here, have some money. I realize it came out of the Camp David Accords, and it's been going on forever, and we send money to Egypt as well, you know, in order to facilitate the peace. And, you know, Jimmy Carter won a Nobel Prize for it and all that stuff. Quack, quack, quack. But they've got a national health care system that apparently we're paying for. We can't afford that. I'm with Bernie Sanders on this. It's time to, and multiple other Democrats who are speaking out this way. It's time to say to Israel, you guys are rich. You guys have some of the best technology in the world. You've got some of the best universities in the world. You're doing just fine. You're a wealthy country, one of the wealthiest countries in the world on a per capita basis. You're on your own now. You don't need American help anymore. You don't need our $3.5 billion a year. You don't need us to be giving you weaponry. You don't, you know, it's like, you know, good luck. And please, you know, rejoin the world of nations that actually respect human rights. And do something about what these settlers are doing on the West Bank, stealing land and killing people and terrorizing Palestinians. And you know, let's rebuild Gaza in a way that is not, you know, lesser Israel. I mean, the Palestinians deserve to have their own country. And I realize that sentiment is probably why Netanyahu bombed them back to the Stone Age. And it's getting no coverage any longer, that all these Gazans are living in tents and in you know, these god-awful refugee situations. But it's a tragedy. It's a disaster. It shouldn't be going on. And we're paying for it. We're funding it with our tax dollars. And the Republican Party is all in on it, by the way. The British ambassador this morning made a comment that America no longer has a special relationship with Great Britain, that instead we only have a special relationship with Israel. This is, you know, the whole world is noticing this. 14 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
It's talk media for the sane among us. Bait and switch, whatever happened to private donors paying for Trump's gilded ballroom? We'll get to that in just a second. Stay with us. And welcome back. Sandy in Nelma, Wisconsin. Hey, Sandy, what's on your mind? Thanks for watching Free Speech.
Thank you. I have a question concerning the ladies that were treated wrongly by all these men.
Mm-hmm. You're talking the Epstein?
Go on. Yes. Yeah. Can't they go on TV and just start naming names? Is there something that's holding them back?
Probably the fear of lawsuits and death threats. I mean, Virginia Giuffre got I don't know if she was sued, but she certainly got a lot of death threats, as did her family. I mean, would you go on TV and name a billionaire?
I would. Yes, I would.
Yeah.
Well, I've been a girl too, honey, and I know what men have done.
I get it.
Oh, yeah.
I get it. I can't speak for them. I don't know any of them personally. We haven't had any of them on the program, so I don't know. But all I can do is speculate that, speaking out against very wealthy, powerful people is a very dangerous thing to do. I can tell you that from personal experience. And
yeah. I wish they would. Because they're still going to get crap no matter what.
Yeah. Well, there have been, I mean, was it CNN or BBC? Just last week, I saw a special a TV report, a news report, where they actually named five or six of the billionaires who were accused of having raped underage girls. They actually named them. Black was one of them. I want to say Louis Black, but that's the comedian. I forget his first name. They actually named them. But it got, it's getting no traction because nobody wants to be in the libel lawsuit, potential circle. So anyway, Sandy, I got to move along. Thanks for the call. It's a great question. I don't have an easy answer. I'm sorry. Rosemary in Snowflake, Arizona. Hey, Rosemary, what's on your mind today? Rosemary, watching us on Free Speech TV? Rosemary is not watching or not listening to her phone. Andrew in Redmond, California. Hey, Andrew, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's up?
I want to talk about climate change and fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
But if I can quickly say regarding our political system in the U.S., I think we should vote out most or all of the Republicans, as well as the Democratic leadership, and replace them with progressive Democrats and progressive parties such as Green Party members and Peace and Freedom Party members.
Yeah.
It's a two-step process.
Yeah.
I'm for our country. Now, and thanks for speaking up for the Palestinians, Tom. Mm-hmm. And in regards to climate change and fossil fuels, first of all, I believe that we should definitely transition off of fossil fuels onto renewable energy sources such as solar and wind, for many reasons, as well as climate change. I think that humans will be, and the planet will be just fine, regardless of climate change and what happens. But I'd like to pose these two questions. What if climate change is inevitable and will be happening no matter what humans do, and that fossil fuels are not causing climate change?
Fossil fuels are definitely causing climate change. And yes, climates do change over time, but they change over periods of hundreds of thousands or millions of years. What we're looking at is not a natural variation. It's 100% man-made, Andrew, and there's no doubt about that, outside of the liars funded by the fossil fuel industry. Andrew, thanks for the call. Missed my opening rant today? It's usually published over at HartmanReport.com, where you can read it and share it with your friends for free. Check it out, HartmanReport.com. Way back in 1964, when Lyndon Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act, the Republicans started this rant about how the election of 1960, Jack Kennedy stole that election, and there's voter fraud in America. And it became a thing. They started this thing called Operation Eagle Eye. William Rehnquist was running it in Arizona, you know, trying to intimidate Hispanics and African Americans into not voting, essentially. They have now used this claim that non-citizens are voting, this voter fraud claim, in virtually every red state to make it harder to vote, to purge people off the voting rolls, to make people's votes not counted with their exact signature matches. It's a scam. It's a grift that they've been running for 60 years, and the American media won't call them out on it. There's a whole piece about it called Trump and the GOP's Big Lie 2.0 over at HartmanReport.com. Please check it out. You'll find it fascinating. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Bait and switch. What happened to the private donors? Seriously, these so-called private donors that are we're going to pay for Trump's gilded white elephant ballroom, his dance hall. We need to start calling it a dance hall rather than a ballroom. Remember when Donald Trump bulldozed the historic east wing of the White House and swore up and down that private donors will foot every penny of his $400 million boondoggle? Well, here comes the bait and switch. After Saturday's shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Senate Republicans Graham, Britt, and Schmidt rolled out legislation Monday dumping the cost on you and me, on taxpayers. Of the $400 million estimated, they suggest that $332 million would be taxpayer dollars paid through customs fees and imports. Yeah, we're going to use that tariff money, right? Graham said with a straight face that private donations could be used for buying China and stuff like that. So the gilded ballroom that Donald Trump promised would be 100% privately funded suddenly becomes a national security event. You're paying $4.11 or more at the pump. That's the national average now. And now you're paying for Trump's gilded ballroom, too. Wendy Lawrence over on Glass Empire, I think it's called. Or she's got a great Substack. W.A. Lawrence, you can look it up on Substack. Great Substack newsletter is talking about how basically there has not been a business that Donald Trump has ever run in his whole entire career as a businessman that wasn't corrupt, that wasn't a scam. You know, his casinos, his phony university, his airline, his steak company, his vodka company, his board game, basically everything he's ever done has either survived because of Russian money, that's his real estate empire, or has gone bankrupt. The only thing he's ever successfully done that didn't either require Russian money or go bankrupt was being a reality TV star, which is what he's doing now. It's the one thing he's good at. And, you kind of have to tip your hat to him and say, okay, Donald, you are pretty good as a reality TV star, but that doesn't mean that you should run a country. We have such a mess here. It is so unfortunate. So what's on your mind today? Let's pick up some calls here. Calvin in Grove City, Ohio. Hey, Calvin, what's up?
Hi, Dom.
Hey.
Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure.
About how Trump is Putin's Putin is Trump's mentor.
Yes,
and how
that's clear.
The three countries that are he's the only, he Trump or Putin was the one that told him to block that to go against Iran to cause all this because the three countries that gained the most out of it were the ones that weren't getting anything like Iran. China and Russia. They're the one that gains the most because they weren't getting anything out of it.
They gained the most from what?
The oil. Because oil, they were never sold any oil out of Iran.
Iran is a big supplier of oil to the world, and particularly to China and Southeast Asia.
And also, Russia is a big supplier of oil, which they are allowed to use now since he's blocked that oil.
Well, no, Trump suspended our sanctions on Russian oil, number one. So Russian oil is going all over the world. And number two, the one ship that made its way through the Straits of Hormuz yesterday was a 400-foot Russian mega yacht owned by a Russian oligarch. And I would love to know how much money that Russian oligarch has given to Donald Trump or his businesses over the years. I'll bet there's a money trail.
I think it's Putin's the one that did it, because Putin was in control of Cuba. They were trying to get Cuba. Putin was in charge of Venezuela. And they tried to go into Venezuela, and there was Russians already in there taking care of their country. And this is how things are there. Also, tariffs. There's a thing about tariffs I'm thinking about. If you take 30% tariffs, that's like $300. Every $100 you get three. You have to pay $30.
Okay.
And they said that we can't have that anymore. So he still put a 15% on there. So every $100, you're paying $15.
Right.
$1,000, you're paying.
Yeah, and that's going to run out of. He's got a time limit on that, by the way.
But he keeps changing every time he says that.
I know. He's going to figure out a way around the time limit, or he's just going to ignore the law. I mean, the War Powers Act says that the United States can only bomb another country if we've been bombed first, if we've been attacked first, and yet we bombed Iran. And now you've got all these Republicans going, well, he's got 60 days under the War Powers Act. No, he broke the War Powers Act. He broke the law. I mean, it's crazy.
And the only reason why we got into Vietnam was McNamara told a lie.
And
that's what started Vietnam.
Yep, and LBJ repeated it. And LBJ didn't know. Now we know that LBJ didn't know for several weeks that McNamara had told a lie about the Gulf of Tonkin incident when the USS, what was the ship that got hit? The Nimitz. No, it wasn't the Nimitz. Whatever it was, anyhow. The McNamara basically made that up because he wanted to expand the war. And then once LBJ had publicized it, he was stuck with it. And then he figured, well, okay, McNamara says we can get out of this war very quickly, so we'll just do that. Big mistake. And I think it's a mistake that Trump is repeating right now. If he doesn't figure out a way to cut and run, Iran is going to be Trump's Vietnam.
But the mayor of New York is the one that I like to people to mentor. I learned how to do politics.
But Mamdani, Zoran Mamdani is a brilliant politician. You're absolutely right. Calvin, thanks for the call. Thanks for listening to us there in Ohio on SiriusXM. Appreciate it. We'll be right back. It's 27 minutes past the hour, picking up your calls. What's on your mind today? It's the Tom Hartman Program. Speaking the truth to multinational corporations, we'd really rather you didn't know all about. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It was the USS Maddox. Anyway, we'll be right back. Stick around. Executives warn of pain at the pump. Big oil rakes in $30 million an hour. Republicans flip the ballroom bill onto taxpayers. And America shuts down on May Day. Good morning. This is the Commonwealth Report, news for the public, not the powerful. You can sign up for free at commonwealthreport.news. Why are oil executives warning of a catastrophic price shock at the pump? A senior oil industry executive has a message for America. The pain at the pump hasn't started. Dan Pickering, chief investment officer at Pickering Energy Partners, told Politico that when summer driving season hits, gas prices will deliver a shock that hits people in the face. His exact words. It will be painful. With Trump's Iran war dragging on and the Strait of Hormuz still choked off, oil and gas executives are openly furious at Trump's market-manipulating happy talk. They warn another spike is coming around Memorial Day. National gas prices have already jumped from $2.94 a week the week before the war to nearly $4. Actually, it's over $4 now nationally. Some experts now predict $5 a gallon. Trump's war of choice is bleeding working families dry, and the oil bosses know it. Big oil pockets obscene profits while working people bleed.
Who's making out like bandits while you pay over $4 a gallon? The world's 100 biggest oil and gas companies pocketed more than $30 million in windfall profits every hour during the first month of Trump's Iran war. That's The Guardian's analysis. The biggest winners are Saudi Arabia, Kuwait Petroleum, and ExxonMobil. If oil stays around $100 a barrel, big oil will rake in another $234 billion in war profits this year. Patrick Gailey of Global Wellness calls it Christmas for fossil fuel companies. They sit back and watch profits multiply while ordinary people pay the price. Greenpeace and climate groups gathered this week in Santa Marta, Colombia, demanding governments tax these obscene profits. Every American driver is funding big oil's biggest payday in history. Democrats lead the polls, but voters are begging for new blood. Democrats are surging in polling for the 2026 midterms. Trump's approval has cratered to the low 30s. A new Yale Youth poll has Democrats up 23 points among voters 18 to 22, 30 points among voters 23 to 29, and 39 points among voters 30 to 34. And these are numbers Democrats haven't seen since Obama in 2008. But here's the catch. Young voters don't want the same old faces. According to fundraising platform Oath, more than 80 young Americans have launched campaigns for Congress this cycle, four times more than last time. They've already raised over $10 million. Oath's CEO, Brian Derrick, says there's a real rift between younger voters and older Democrats who seem more focused on hanging on for another term than fighting for working people. The message to leadership is clear. Make room. Is Netanyahu helping Putin loot Ukraine? This should outrage every American who supports Ukraine and democracy. Russia has industrialized the theft of Ukrainian grain. More than 2 million tons looted from occupied territory in 2025 alone. And Israel keeps letting it in. On Sunday, the Panama-flagged ship Pantorimus arrived at Haifa carrying over 6,200 tons of stolen wheat and 19,000 tons of stolen barley. It's the second time this month. Earlier in April, the Russian carrier Abinsk dumped nearly 44,000 tons of stolen Ukrainian wheat at the same port. Egypt refuses these shipments, but Israel takes them. Ukraine's foreign minister has summoned the Israeli ambassador. The EU is warning of sanctions. So why is Netanyahu running cover for Putin while Russia arms Iran and ships drone parts that kill Ukrainian civilians? Bait and switch? Whatever happened to the private donors paying for Trump's gilded ballroom? Remember when Donald Trump bulldozed the historic East Wing of the White House and swore up and down that private donors would fund every penny of his $400 million ballroom boondoggle? Here comes the bait and switch. After Saturday's shooting at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, Senate Republicans Graham, Britt, and Schmidt rolled out legislation Monday dumping the cost on taxpayers. Of the $400 million, $332 million would be taxpayer dollars paid through customs fees on imports. Graham said with a straight face that private donations could be used for buying China and stuff like that. So the gilded ballroom Trump promised would be 100% privately funded suddenly becomes a national security event. You pay $4 at the pump and now you're paying for Trump's gilded ballroom as well. America shuts down on May Day. This Friday, May 1st, working Americans plan to shut this country down. The May Day Strong Coalition has organized over 3,000 protests across all 50 states demanding workers come before billionaires. The action is simple. No school, no work, no shopping. The movement got its spark in Minnesota on January 23rd when 50,000 protesters marched in 20 below temperatures after an ICE agent shot and killed Renee Good, a 37-year-old mother of three and U.S. citizen in Minneapolis. Hundreds of Minnesota businesses closed their doors. Now it's national. Major unions are joining in, including the AFT, NEA, and National Nurses United. Rebecca Winter of Mass 50501 said it best, "We pay more for everything while those in power cash in. We the people are the economy, and we decide when it stops." And that's the way it is. Today, Tuesday, April 28th, 2026. I'm Tom Hartman.
Share the Tom Hartman program with your friends. Our podcast, The Hartman Report, is absolutely free and available wherever fine podcasts are available. And the entire three-hour podcast is available over at TomHartman.com. Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. And what's on your mind today? Let's pick up some calls here. Marcus in Chicago. Hey, Marcus, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
Earlier, you had mentioned that Hakeem Jeffries' main priority should be the impeachment of Donald Trump. And I disagree with you, and I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
As a black man who has children and grandchildren, I feel the first priority, and it's not like they can't chew gum and walk at the same time, but I feel the first priority should be the codification of the Voting Rights Act. I want my grandchildren and their children to be able to vote. I want others that are born in this country to be able to vote. And the impeachment of Donald Trump is not going to do anything about that. And like I said, it's not like they can't do two things at the same time. So my priority is the codification of the Voting Rights Act, because it's been stripped. And if the Supreme Court does what I think they're going to do in June, it's over with.
I agree. I can't argue with you, Marcus. I would expand that, by the way. I would go back to what we were doing in, what was it, 2022, I think it was, where Pelosi had put forward these two pieces of legislation. H.R. 1 was basically ending or taking a big bite out of Citizens United, and then the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, which would have amplified, reinstated, whatever, you know, overturned several Supreme Court decisions and made voting
exactly.
A right.
Exactly. But you know something, Tom? Over the years, through Republican and Democratic presidents, Congresses, and Senates, the Heritage Foundation and all of those people knew what that it hadn't been codified, and they were plotting and scheming for all of those years to lead up to what's happening now.
Yeah, you're right.
That's what I want done as a priority.
Yeah, well,
that's
I'll go me. With your statement that they can walk and chew gum at the same time. I think that they can reintroduce H.R. 1, you know, the For the People Act, and reintroduce the John Lewis Voting Rights Act, and introduce articles of impeachment all at the same time. So
yeah, but quiet's kept, you know, unless they have a super majority in the Senate, impeaching Donald Trump is a it's not going to happen.
No, he's not going to be removed from office, but that's not the point. The point is highlighting the crimes that this guy has committed, that the entire Republican Party has empowered and is helping to cover up. I think that's huge. And that's going to help every Democrat everywhere in the country.
It can be highlighted through the media. It can be highlighted through these congressmen going on the road, going to their congressional districts, Republican congressional districts, and pointing all of that out.
But nothing will do it like an impeachment, Marcus. Nothing. I mean, when Trump was being impeached the second time, his numbers were in the toilet. That was the worst.
His numbers in the toilet now.
I know. But I'm saying, you know, we need a reckoning. America, we've got a criminal in the White House, and a convicted criminal, for that matter. A rapist and a thief and a fraudster.
77 million people voted for him.
That yes, and he's still a criminal, and we need to do something about it. And my objection to Hakeem Jeffries is not a question of what's going 1, 2, 3. It's that basically he said we're not going to do that. And I'd have to go back and find the exact language, but I think that we need to be doing that.
He's not and going to make it a priority.
Right, exactly.
He's not going to
I think
do
it should
that.
Be a priority.
He's not going to make it a priority, and yeah. I don't blame him.
Yeah.
I want him to codify voting rights. Make that the priority.
I get it, Marcus.
For my people.
I get it. We're starting to repeat ourselves here. So, you know, I'm going with your, we can all, you know, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Wayne, and Wayne, you're a trucker. Where are you today?
I'm in.
I'm listening.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Wayne. Where are you?
Can you hear me? Okay. Well, I know I've got, I can't find a good signal here. I'm in Wisconsin.
Okay. I can hear you now.
Okay, there we go. Good. Oh, let me get over here. I think I'm going to go ahead and just pull off the road for a minute. What I called for, Tom, I got thinking, you're talking about all the, you know, the oligarchs and all these people with all the money, and we got these tech bros and everybody that's basically trying to run our government today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Big tech, big oil, big, you know, all these things. We pay, you know. How did they figure out fracking? Well, we, the taxpayers, paid for the monies that, you know, went into the development of these things. We pay Eli Lilly and these different companies that are drug companies to come up with cures for things. Our tax money gets paid out. All this money that made Elon Musk, that guy out from, you know, California, that came from South Africa. You know who Elon is, right?
I'm not sure. Oh, you mean Elon Musk?
Yeah, that's it, Elon Musk. Anyway, you know, he all that money he got. Well, we know he got a few million dollars off selling an idea of his company.
Oh, if Obama hadn't bailed out Tesla, Elon Musk would be broke.
Exactly. So all that money, he was paid all this money for these contracts to learn things to make it, you know, make it better for America.
Mm-hmm.
And yet every time we pay out, all our tax money goes to paying out all this money to these big conglomerates and all these big corporations that they sell what we paid for back to us.
Mm-hmm.
Am I wrong?
No, you're not
wrong. They get richer and richer and richer, and it's all based on our tax money that they use to develop it, and then they claim what are the big, like, the big drug companies, their claim is, well, all the upfront money, we have to come up with all this money in order to do all this science work in order to figure out. No, they're using our money to do that.
Yeah.
And then they sell it back to us at a premium.
Yeah.
And this has been going on for the past good 50 years now.
Oh yeah, it's an old grift. It's like when Donald Trump started his casinos in New Jersey. He sold $1.5 billion worth of bonds. The bondholders all got screwed. He got the money.
Uh-huh.
And then the state gave him these massive tax breaks. The state taxpayers got screwed. Donald Trump kept the money. And then he got convicted. He got prosecuted for and convicted and had to pay a fine for money laundering, for running them as criminal enterprises, and still bankrupted them. I mean, you know, that's just the smallest
thing,
example of this much larger issue that you're talking about, Wayne. Yeah, absolutely.
Tom, no, you're missing one, though. Talking about that, talking about the ballroom, what about the 10% that Trump is the consulting main person for? He's getting a 10% fee. So of the $400 billion that he's already collected from all these oligarchs, he's already getting to keep 40 million of it. How the heck does that work out?
I didn't know about that.
And yeah, and well, now he's taking, now they're talking about he, yeah.
He's taking he's a fee taking for a being the banker, basically, for collecting the money.
Basically, yeah. Right. And then the other thing. Okay, you're telling me that they collected almost $400 million or over $300 million. I know that they said anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to go to buy to China. To buy China and silverware? Okay, well, let's make this make sense, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay, so where's the rest of that money going? Where's all that money going? Whose pocket?
Right into Donald's pocket. I think we can pretty much guarantee, Wayne, anytime there's money sloshing around, Donald is going to have a big chunk of it in his hand or in his pocket.
I know you take a lot of time, and there's a lot of things that you've worked on, and over the years, you produce, you know, I've been listening to your audiobooks, some of your books that are on audiobook. But Tom, is there any way that you could look more into how we, the taxpayers, are the ones that are funding all of this research around the world, and then we end up having to buy back with our already taxed dollars, have to buy back the research that we paid for in the first place?
Yeah, it's a great topic.
Can we go into more depth of that?
Yeah, I've never written a book on it. I've written individual op-eds on it, but never done a book. But I get it. I get it. Wayne, I got to move along, but thank you for the call.
Thanks,
it's always nice to hear from you. George in Cripple Creek, Virginia. Hey, George, what's up?
Hey, Tom. This is an article from Izvestia on April 24th.
George, I need you to get closer to the microphone on your phone. It's hard to hear you.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, this is an article from Izvestia on April 24th. Armed continent. Germany aims to lead the militarization of Europe, and this is based on their doctrine, responsibility for Europe, which makes Germany the most powerful military force in the EU, and based on Russia being the main threat against the EU, which Germany must defend against.
Mm-hmm.
And Germany is investing $108 billion this year to develop its military-industrial complex, and €377 billion over the next 10 years to rearm the Bundeswehr and increase its strength to 460,000.
Mm-hmm.
And this coincides with the new EU doctrine called Military Schengen, which is named after the Dutch defense minister who developed this strategy.
Right.
And the EU is investing $800 billion over the next several years to strengthen the EU defense industry and to invest in Ukraine's defense industry, and also strengthen the infrastructure for rapid deployment of EU forces to the eastern borders with Russia.
Mm-hmm.
And the article says that Lithuania is going to be the most likely flashpoint because Germany is sending a 5,000-man brigade to Lithuania. And NATO has a scenario for the seizure and blockade of Kaliningrad, which used to be Königsberg up until 1945
in
East Prussia.
Yeah.
And Russia has responded by modernizing its nuclear land forces in the area by 95% and its naval forces by 100%.
Yep. I've worked in Kaliningrad. I'm familiar with the area. So what's the significance of all this, George, in your opinion as a defense analyst or a national security guy?
Well, I think it's right, you know, especially, you know, if Germany assumes military leadership of the EU, Russia isn't going to be happy with that. And they also point out in the article that several of the EU neighbors, such as Poland, which suffered, you know, tremendously from the Nazis during World War II, is, you know, asking for reparations. And the Greeks are unhappy because they believe that Germany, which is already supplying modern submarines to Turkey, will do the same. We will increase their cooperation with Turkey and threaten Greek security in the Aegean Sea. So it's going to lead to a lot of complications.
Oh my! Do you think we're close to a World War I scenario here, George?
It looks like, yeah, like, you know, cascading alliance, like Kaiser Wilhelm said. You know, he told his troops, "You'll be home before the leaves fall." They thought it'd be over by Christmas or, you know,
yes,
autumn.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out that way. Yeah, once the two trains mobilizations are going, they couldn't stop them, and it just cascaded into World War One, and all the great powers got involved.
Yeah.
You know, it could just taste a little flashpoint like Kaliningrad to get NATO involved and Russia, etc. So yeah, I'm pretty wary about this kind of scenario. Yeah.
Me too. And not to mention what's going on with Iran. George, thank you. I always learn something from you.
Yeah.
Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
I enjoy your new news feature. That's great, Tom.
Okay. Thank you, George. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
By the way, if you'd like to get our newscasts, just go over to CommonwealthReport.news. N-E-W-S. welcome back. Gar in Atlanta, Georgia. Hey, Gar, what's up?
Oh, how you doing, Tom?
Good.
A little bit of my thunder. Yeah, because George is right on point, but I was more or less talking about the weapons in the Middle East. Most of Iran's weapons came from the United States and Israel. And you remember Iran-Contra?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a long history of Israel supplying.
Yeah, but that was back in the
Middle East.
I thought Iran's modern military was mostly Russian equipment. Although I'm no expert on the region. Yeah.
No. Israel supplied Al Qaeda and.
They funded Hamas for years and years. Netanyahu did.
Yeah, you know why, don't you? They wanted them to fight the PLO.
That's exactly right. It was divide and conquer.
And another thing, have you ever did a history study on black powder, gunpowder?
You didn't
do a history study on gunpowder, black powder.
You're talking about it was invented in China back in the first millennia or something like that? I'm not sure what you're talking about.
But the suppliers supplied both sides during the Civil War, the Revolutionary War, and now the weapons industry is supplying both sides in the Middle East, both sides in Ukraine and Russia. They're supplying both sides.
Yeah. Well, that's how it works.
I mean, it's an interesting study. Study the history of gunpowder, black powder.
Mm. Yeah.
And you'll understand what's going on in the world right now.
Sure. Okay. Gar, thank you. Thank you for the call. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Chaz, what's up?
Spasiba, comrade. Is another glorious day in Trumpistan, is it not?
Indeed it is. Duh.
Hey, before I get to my point, I wanted to, when you get home, to thank Wolfie. I heard him purr during your Commonwealth report, and I know you got 6 million other callers, and you can't appease them all, but in a very presidential moment, I want to say, I don't care.
Yeah, about what?
About the 6 million other viewers want. I'm feeling presidential, so I'm going to say I don't care.
I get it, Jess. Right. Wolfie was there at a fine time this morning. He jumped up on my lap and demanded that he stay there. Although he jumped off halfway through the newscast.
I noticed a couple days ago he nipped your finger.
Yeah, he bit me. Wolfie is part wild. Louise kind of rescued him years ago, and for a long time he you just couldn't get near him. He would bite people and stuff, and now he's turned. But he's old and arthritic now, which is why he's living in my office because the other cats
and cranky
pick on him. Yeah, he's actually asking. I mean, he's jumping on my lap now. I mean, 10 years ago he wouldn't have come near any human being, so other than Louise.
Every cat I've ever had has been feral and rehabilitated, and you know, somebody's got to do it. It's a tough job, right,
yeah,
Tom?
Of all the
things you got to worry about, that's right at the top of the list, right?
Yeah, there you go. But his great-grandfather was a genuine wildcat, like a 30, 40-pound wildcat, so...
Oh, man, wouldn't that be a great house cat to have?
I don't think so. Wolfie was enough of a challenge.
I wanted to add to Trump's list of oxymorons, like most transparent administration, Liberation Day, affordability, the war's over, and top secret ballroom. Wasn't that a Monty Python early movie? Come on.
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel nailed it. You know, he said, well, it's not a top secret anymore. Jazz, thanks for the call. Wolfie, thanks you too. It is 52 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in just a second. Hey, thanks so much for sharing our program and for reaching out to our stations and sponsors and letting them know that you're listening. It really means a lot to us. Welcome back. 53 minutes past the hour. Picking up your calls, Joni in Mount Shasta, California. Hey, Joni, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to raise
Joni, your phone is... It sounds like you're talking through a blender. Is there, is it a Bluetooth or something? Or
is that better? I can try. Is that any better?
Joni, I'm gonna put you on hold, and Mateo's talking to somebody else right now. I hope you can hear me. Mateo, Joni's on line five, if you can find out what's going on. Oh, damn, I hit the wrong button. Joni, I'm so sorry. I hung up on you. If you call back real quick, maybe we can get you in there, because, you know, the line that you were just on just opened up. My apologies. Rosemary in Snowflake, Arizona. Hey, Rosemary, what's on your mind today?
Thank you for taking my call, Mr. Hartman. I just wanted to say that I'm looking forward to King Charles's speech to the Joint Congress, mm-hmm. because I think it would be really important if he kind of lightened the situation up and said something about letting us use any of the bases that we wanted to use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of the enemies of this country listen to all the shows. And if we started seeing a little bit more support, I think it would help us out a lot.
Yeah.
Do you think so? I mean, I don't think everything is despair. I think it's a great country. I'm sure you believe it, too, with your background. And I think there's a lot of hopeful things that could happen to change the tenor of the country at the moment.
You know, it's going to be interesting to see what he does and what he says, because he certainly has a long list of things that he could go after Trump over. Whether that's going to happen or not, or whether he's going to try and play peacemaker. I'm guessing my sense of it, you know, of Charles himself, is that he's always tried to be the peacemaker, that not necessarily appeasement, but, you know, finding common ground kind of thing. But,
I don't see him as a PR lightweight spokesman. I see him as a person, you know, who's groomed by Elizabeth II, who was one of the smoothest diplomats out there. I mean, she got things done that she wanted to get done, you know, through her contacts and her public appearances and her friendships around the world. And I think that certainly he would have picked that up. So he certainly was in training for a very, very long time. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he has his own agenda, but he's still the king of, and affecting a large amount of people. So I just see it as very hopeful. He could lead the way and have some of our allies from the past, especially, you know, come on board a little bit more and change the way our enemies are, you know, thinking that, you know, they've got an edge or a toehold. I mean, I'm sure you know that with your background. They don't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand that you were with the NSC. Is that true? I really don't know you. I don't watch your program.
No,
Bill O'Reilly.
I once did consulting work for one of our security agencies, but it was just, you know, in advertising and marketing kind of stuff.
But I mean, you still have to understand what's going on to help them.
Yeah, but I think that the other thing I think is noteworthy is that his son and grandchildren live here in the United States, and they're not going to get together. That, I think, is a real tragedy. That saddens me.
I didn't know that. But, of course, I look at that as part of his personal life, and this is clearly a PR political, type of trip. So,
for sure.
Also, I'm very surprised that he's able to make the trip with his health news and everything. And, of course, I know everybody in the country wishes
him well. I think he's doing
better.
I got to run, Rosemary. Thanks for the call. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
X-Ray FM is supported by our friends at Harka Architecture, whose mission is to uplift your ideas and our community. Harka brings expertise in toxicity, high performance, and resiliency to all their projects. They are a full-service architectural and interior firm specializing in middle housing infill, ADUs, remodels, and adaptive commercial reuse.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1965. That was the day the American Federation of Hosiery Workers merged with the Textile Workers Union of America. Hosiery workers had begun organizing as early as 1909. By 1923, the American Federation of Full Fashion Hosiery Workers, as the union was originally called, had affiliated with the American Federation of Labor. Women made up the majority of those employed in the industry. Competition within the industry was fierce and a major focus for the early union. From its founding, the union was known for its progressive stances. It focused not only on contracts, but also on social welfare programs such as pensions and health insurance. During the Great Depression in 1933, the union pushed for the founding of a low-rent housing project in Philadelphia. The result was the Carl Mackley Houses, a subsidized governmental housing project. The union operated a nursery school for residents of Carl Mackley and the surrounding community. When the Congress of Industrial Organizations broke off from the AFL, the hosiery union left with them as part of the Textile Workers Organizing Committee. In the spring of 1937, Pennsylvania hosiery workers held a sit-down strike. The strike was led by Emil